The scripture reading today comes from Luke 13, 31 through 35. At that very hour, some Pharisees came to Jesus and said, "Get away from here, for Herod wants to kill you." He said to them, "Go and tell that fox for me, 'Listen, I'm casting out demons and performing cures today and tomorrow, and on the third day I finish my work. Yet today, tomorrow, and the next day, I must be on my way, because it is impossible for a prophet to be killed outside of Jerusalem.' Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often I have desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. See, your house is left to you. And I tell you, you will not see me again until the time comes when you say, 'Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord.'"
I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back. Beginning in the 9th chapter of Luke's Gospel, Jesus sets his face toward Jerusalem, where he might be, where he will be arrested and condemned. It appears that he does this with a single-mindedness of purpose. No turning back. And yet along the way, we read that he stops to teach and to heal, or simply to sit and spend time with those who love him. In today's passage in the 13th chapter, we find Jesus confronted by Pharisees who come to warn him to move on quickly because Herod is after him. Now, Herod Antipas was the successor to the Herod of the Nativity stories, not the same person. But Scripture and other sources tell us in so many ways the same person. They tell us that Herod was filled with a deep hunger for power and security that was motivated by fear. Fear. We, too, live in fearful times. Television and print media, electronic news sources give us grim reminders that our world is a dangerous and unpredictable place. Acts of terrorism, mass murders, natural disasters, systemic violence, domestic abuse, war, famine, and so much more happen daily. And the prevalence of social media and nonstop 24/7 newscasts overwhelm us with tales of economic and social woe. And they seek to encourage our allegiance to national and political party. And yet, this journey that we are on through Lent into Easter resurrection, this journey reminds us that our primary allegiance does not lie with nation, or even with family or tribe. Our first allegiance is to the God who created all. The Apostle Paul uses the language that we are citizens of heaven, not of any nation state. Citizens of heaven living out God's values of love and mercy and justice today and every day. A priest once asked Jesus, "Who is my neighbor?" And Jesus replied, "Every person you meet is your neighbor. Every person." So as citizens of heaven, God calls us to become a shalom community of love and belonging, a gathering in of all of God's chicks, regardless of race or ethnicity, sexual orientation or gender expression, regardless of political views or faith, tradition, or doctrinal stance. All God's chicks. You see, communities of love and belonging are beautiful and are necessary in order for us to fulfill our living out of God's values of justice and shalom in relationship with one another. They are an antidote to the fear-mongering that surrounds us. For it's this community that calls us to prayer despite fears for safety. It's this community that calls us and gives us the courage to stand publicly when others are being attacked. Communities of love and belonging are those places and spaces that give you life, that nourish your soul and remind you who you truly are. Because there is no love and belonging where there is not respect and regard. There is not love and belonging when you are overlooked and dismissed. There is not love and belonging when you are told that you don't measure up, that you don't meet expectations, that you are not enough. It's only in community that we find our way to doing the hard work and the good work of living out God's justice and shalom. In today's scripture text, we see two forms of power at work. Herod uses political force and military might. He perceives Jesus as a threat, and so warnings of violence and intimidation are the immediate response. And unfortunately, this response is found within communities of faith as well. Richard Swanson observed that Herod, regardless of what name he goes by in whatever century, or she, equal opportunity, Herod has found allies throughout the years among people of faith. So we remember that in the past, Christians used the Bible as a reason to defend and justify slavery. And we recognize today that some use the scriptures to deny the inherent dignity and the God-given worth of our lesbian and gay and bisexual and transgender siblings. We remember that in our fear, we make decisions to imprison the stranger, the refugee, in our midst for the sake of security. We know that we have failed to respond to God's call to love, and instead, all too often, we have turned God's words of love into actions of finger pointing and a call to arms. Without a community of love and belonging, it is all too easy to be seduced by the forces of power and might. Jesus, you see, chooses a different path. When the Pharisees came to him, warning him of Herod's threat, his response was not one of hatred, not one of animosity. It was not one of fear or polarization, that entrenchment back into the security of our own social group. He doesn't react by rallying the troops. Instead, he lays out his plans. I am casting out demons and performing cures today and tomorrow, and then after that I will be finished. I am continuing on to Jerusalem, he says, despite what you say. And then he enters into lament. A lament driven by compassion and his love for Jerusalem and all her inhabitants. He says, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. Perhaps in the same way the prophets before him did, Jesus was speaking of God's desire to bring all God's children together. Yet it could be as well that Jesus was naming and reflecting on his own attempts along the way to gather God's children to God through him. Perhaps he was thinking of that lawyer who asked, "Who is my neighbor?" Or of Martha who burst out with frustration over her sister. Of that Pharisee who invited him to dinner and ended up receiving a lecture on being clean from within. Maybe he's thinking of the disciples who are nervous about what he is telling them about what lies ahead. Some received Jesus' presence with thanksgiving and love. Others received it with resentment, and still others with confusion that gave way to anger. In a sense, Jesus has been gathering together his own community of love and belonging all along the way. Jesus has been gathering together his community, or at least seeking to. All along the way. If you have ever loved someone that you could not protect, then you understand the depths of Jesus' lament. All you can do is open your arms. You cannot make them walk into them. Wings spread and breast exposed. And yet Jesus says, if you believe, this is how you stand. Given the variety of animals that exist in the world, Jesus chooses a hen, right? I mean, where is the biblical precedence for that? What about the mighty eagle from Exodus? I like that one. What about Hosea's stealthy leopard? That one was kind of cool. What about the proud lion of Judah that mows down his enemies with simply a roar? Compared to any of these, that mother hen doesn't really inspire a lot of confidence. And yet a hen is what Jesus chooses, and it is so appropriate to the message that he lived. He's always turning things right side up, so that children and peasants wind up on top and rulers and scholars wind up on the bottom. So that the last is paid first. And he gives prizes to losers instead of winners. And so, of course, he becomes a chicken, which is about as far from a fox as you can get. And the options then become clear for us. You can live by seeking to satisfy your power, or you can risk dying by protecting the chicks. Being new to farm country, relatively, the imagery is new to me, so perhaps you already know this, but when a fox gets into a hen house, most of the time the mother hen gets her brood of chicks under her wings and then stands there protecting them with her breast exposed. The fox must kill her to get to them. And oftentimes there's a flurry of feathers and young chicks running around, and yet they are still alive. Into these days, where violence and oppression and fear seek to take hold, this is the image Jesus gives to us. So through the gospel stories, we come to understand that Jesus is never going to be king of the jungle, at least not in the way the world sees. Yet what he will be is a mother hen who stands between the chicks and those who seek to do them harm. She has no fangs. She has no claws. All she does have is her willingness to offer herself. Because if the fox wants to get to the chicks, it's got to go through her first. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back. And Jesus says, if this is what you believe, then this is how you stand.